What we do in life echoes in eternity.
You will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live.
From the WSFI studio in Libertyville, Illinois, this is Pro-Life Today with your host, Joe Scheidler.
Greetings to all my listeners out there for my new show. I am Joe Scheidler, and I'm going to be talking mostly about abortion that threatens our nation as it kills our children. And as we said in the very beginning of the program, we're fighting against the annihilation of our posterity. I've been active in the pro-life action movement since 1972. I actually went to a rally in Chicago where Henry Hyde was speaker. It was a beautiful Saturday afternoon, and I wanted to listen to a Notre Dame football game or watch it on TV, and my wife said she had promised we'd go to this meeting downtown. So I had to go, and I took my three little boys with me. This was in 1972, and the state of Illinois at that time was considering relaxing its laws against abortion, and my wife was concerned about it, and I was really not into abortion. I didn't know much about it, even though I had been through the seminary and I had been in the Navy, where there were often guys collecting money for an abortion for their girlfriend and so on. It wasn't a big issue with me until they handed me a flyer called Life and Death. And they handed it with the cover down because the cover was so graphic. But on the back of the flyer was a picture of a black bag full of little children, dead children from a hospital in Canada. I couldn't believe it. And one of the little boys in the corner of that bag full of babies looked like my son Eric's baby picture. And I was hooked. From then on, I was going to fight abortion. I had no idea at that time, in November of 1972, that in just a few months, the nation would be steeped in abortion with a ruling by the Supreme Court of the United States, a 72 ruling, Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton, two twin rulings actually read together and decided together, that abortion was legal in our country, in America, for the full term of a woman's pregnancy for any reason at all. Now, a lot of people don't know that. They don't know that abortion is legal up to the day of birth of any baby in the womb, because they haven't read Doe v. Bolton. Doe v. Bolton is the twin ruling out of Georgia. And people all hear about Roe v. Wade, the case out of Texas. And we all know Norma McCorvey, the Roe. But Sandra Cano, God rest her soul, she died not too long ago, was the petitioner in Doe v. Bolton. And in that decision, it says that for any health reason at all, a woman can have an abortion, and health includes mental, physical, psychological, whatever. So all a woman has to do is say that it would be very, very upsetting to me to keep this baby. She can have an abortion because it would upset her. She might be suicidal. Something cut from whole cloth could allow her to have an abortion. But that got me active in studying about abortion. I was working at the time as an account executive for a PR firm, but I spent a lot of time in the office and out of the office trying to find out about abortion. And when it became legal, I had to quit my job with a PR firm and start working full-time to fight this evil of abortion. Now, I've written a book, and it's going to be coming out next year, probably early. It's called Racketeer for Life, because I spent 28 years in court on a racketeer charge from the National Organization for Women and a whole gathering of abortion clinics across the country for costing them money, which I was not sorry about at all, but we didn't think they could use the racketeering corrupt organization law against us, but we went to the Supreme Court. This was a federal charge, so we went to the Supreme Court, and I had the author of the bill, Bob Blakey, argue for me. He's the one who wrote the RICO statute, and I thought that he would be able to argue with the justices that you couldn't use RICO against a social movement, but we lost that case, 9-0, and so we went to trial. The trial lasted 7 weeks, and you read all about this in my book, Racketeer for Life. But I have been active in the movement because I see what is happening in America through abortion is totally corrupting the nation. We can see the downtrend over the past 42 years since abortion became legal, a downtrend in morality, in respect, in the family, in women, in the attitude that so many of our men have toward women, and what's happening with our whole culture. It's gone down, down, down since abortion became the law of the land. So I want to start off, I think, by going through, I think it'd be good to see why abortion is so bad and what people have thought about abortion. You know, it didn't just become an issue with the Supreme Court ruling. Abortion has been an issue from as far back as we can recall in history. The Old Testament was very clear on making it clear that the child is a human being alive from conception. The Old Testament, the Revelations, which the church inherited, give real clear evidence of this, of the life in the womb. Moses says, when you hearken to the voice of the Lord your God, all these blessings will come upon you and overwhelm you. You will be blessed in the city, blessed in the country, and blessed be the fruit of your womb. There's something there of great value. In Job we read, did not he who made me in the womb make him? The Old Testament is very clear. The Psalms bring out the beauty of the unborn child in the womb. And so when the Christian church began, they simply picked up all the teaching that had gone before in the Old Testament. One of the first writings at the very time the church was being founded, right after Christ had risen and commissioned his apostles to take the message out to the people, the Christian writers of the first century had a book called the Didache, in which they are very clear that human life is present at the very beginning. The Didache was used and expounded on by the other teachers in the church. The early Christian writer Tertullian pointed out that the law of Moses ordered strict penalties for causing an abortion. Just one quote, if men who are fighting hit a pregnant woman and she gives birth prematurely, but there is no serious injury, the offender must be fined whatever the husband's demands. But if there is a serious injury, you are to take life for life. In other words, if the baby is born and is dead from the injury, the lex talionis, the law of that time, would require the life of the person who took the life. And they're not talking about the life of the woman, but the life of the offspring, of the baby in the womb. The pregnant mother was considered then to have a living human being in her body that has souls. In the Psalm 51, David had said that surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. That's Psalm 51. So David himself is talking about conception. Then when we get into the New Testament, James has the quote that since from the time of conception the child's body is alive, the child's body must already have its spirit. He says, the body without the spirit is dead. That's the quote from James. In John Paul II wrote Evangelium Vitae, and a beautiful, beautiful document that supports the life and uses many of the Old Testament and New Testament teachings. We have basically two things that tell us that abortion is wrong. One is natural law. We know instinctively that a pregnant woman is carrying a child. She knows it. Her whole system changes. The protection of the child becomes one of her main concerns. And we all respect the pregnant woman. Then we also have the written law that has come from the natural law that tries to protect the unborn child. And that's what we've been trying to do. We mentioned at the very beginning of the program that we are action-oriented because action speaks louder than words. We made a video recently that tells that action speaks louder than words. And that's why it's a little, I might say, ironic that I'm on a talk show when I should be out at the abortion clinic, but I was there earlier, and we talked with some women. Four squad cars showed up because the abortionists don't like us to like having us there. Last week we saved a life. Woman came by and saw us there, and we talked to her, and she decided to go to the crisis pregnancy center instead of having the abortion. And this happens all over the country, all over the world. We aren't just fighting abortion in America, but my son and I and others of us have traveled throughout Europe. We've worked with the pro-lifers in Ireland, in France, in England, and it's a universal problem of having lost respect for human life from the very beginning. So we are the activists, but we also have to tell people the problem of abortion and how it isn't something simply we're trying to deny a woman her right. This is a total misconception that a woman has a right to abortion or that anybody has a right to force a woman into having an abortion, but we see it all the time. I've been at the abortion clinic when I've seen young women pulled in by a scarf around their neck or given a hammerlock and pushed in. I've had girls come out crying, not wanting to have the abortion, and being dragged back into the clinic. Not all that way, but many of them, they see abortion as the only option, and that isn't the case. We have help for these women, and we want to give them that help, and we do. Near most of the abortion clinics we're finding throughout the country, we have a crisis pregnancy center. In Chicago, at Albany Abortion Clinic on Elston Avenue, right over on Cicero, a short walk from the abortion clinic, is the women's center where the woman can be helped through her pregnancy, given all sorts of assistance. She can have an ultrasound and see her baby. And we have a truck that goes around now, a van that has an ultrasound in it. We park in front of abortion clinics where we don't have a crisis pregnancy center nearby. And so a lot of things are being done. But all the time, we have to keep in mind the value of the unborn child. And so that's why I've gone through and just taken out a few things, like from the Psalms and from the Didache, from the writings of people, for instance, such as the letter of Barnabas in 74, the year 74, we read that thou shalt not slay the child by procuring abortion, nor destroy it after it's born. The Apocalypse of Peter says that they came forth from them rays of fire and smote the women in the eyes, and these were accursed who conceived and caused an abortion. And we'll be right back after this ad.
Are you retired or near retirement? you want to keep a larger amount of your assets in a safe place with guaranteed interest rates to protect yourself from a huge market swing? Are you amazed at how low the interest rates are at your bank? If you said yes to any or all of those questions, you may want to call me, Matt Tomlinson, at Catholic Financial Life to discuss our guaranteed fixed rate annuities. Call 847-548-MATT, 847-548-6288. Products not available in all states.
This is Joe Scheidler in Chicago. Want to learn some Latin? Well, here are three simple words that say it all. Ora et labora. That's the motto of the Benedictines, and that means pray and work. Pray for the 4,000 babies who will be cruelly killed in legal abortions today in American cities alone. But also work to end abortion. Pray and work. How do you work? Well, come out to an abortion clinic near you. Pray there, but also talk to the women going in. Offer them help. If you want to know how, give us a call. We're the Pro-Life Action League in Chicago. Call us at 773-777-2900. That's 773-777-2900. Or contact us at prolifeaction.org.
Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to thy protection, implored thy help, or sought thy intercession, was left unaided. Inspired by this confidence, I fly unto thee, O Virgin of Virgins, my Mother. To you I come, before you I stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother of the Word Incarnate, despise not my petitions, but in thy mercy hear and answer me. Amen.
Hi, this is Sharon Brummer with Catholic Charities, serving people of all faiths in southeast Wisconsin. We provide human services from adoption and pregnancy support to counseling, outreach services for people in crisis situation, in-home support for older adults. Visit us online at ccmke.org for more information and for a site close to you. That's ccmke.org.
Okay, this is Joe Scheidler, and I was talking before the break about the tremendous, overwhelming evidence we have that abortion has always been considered to be immoral, to be the killing of a human being in the womb. And I went through the Old Testament, some of the Psalms of David. Job talks about being alive in the womb, and it's overwhelming, the evidence that we have of the humanity of the child. And of course, as Christians, as Catholics, we are all very much aware of the incarnation of Christ. And I was in the Holy Land a couple of years ago with my wife and a group from our church, and the place that affected me most was the site of the Annunciation, because that's where God became man, where God came to earth. The incarnation, when Mary gave her fiat and said, "Be it done to me according to thy word," she became pregnant of the Holy Spirit, but Jesus was in her womb at that moment. And the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, her conception being immaculate, then when she agrees to bear Jesus for us, he is conceived in her womb divinely. So we have the Immaculate Conception of Mary is a high feast in the church, and the Annunciation, when the angel appears to Mary and Mary accepts the pregnancy of God himself, used to be a higher feast than Christmas. Christmas is Jesus' birthday when he appears to man, but actually in the early church, the Feast of the Annunciation was a higher feast because that's when God actually became man, at the conception in Mary's womb. So we can go on through with some of the fathers of the church, and I'm going to bring you just kind of up to date to see how this went, because people say, well, the church didn't decide that it was a human being until after 40 days or after 60 days. And you'll hear these arguments. These have nothing to do with the truth. There was a time, of course, when we talked about ensoulment. But that's archaic. Even the saints who came up with those notions, such as St. Augustine, St. Jerome, St. Thomas Aquinas, they still knew that God's plan was for a human being. All right. So we know from Scripture, we know from the Fathers of the Church, we know from natural law, we know from divine positive law, thou shalt not kill. And what I don't want to overstress this fact, but it's just important that we go through history and see. For instance, St. Basil, in a canonical letter, said that the woman who procures an abortion would have to do a 10-year penance. Obviously, that was for something very serious, and that harkens back even to the Old Testament of doing penance for abortion. John Chrysostom said that in some ways, abortion is worse than an ordinary murder because you give the child no chance at all. We don't know what happens to the child that is aborted. It hasn't been baptized. It can't be baptized. It's given no opportunity at all. And so there are many, many suppositions or theories about what happens to the child that is aborted, and whether it has a chance of salvation, of seeing God, if it's not its fault. But still, we're supposed to have the opportunity to choose, and the baby is not given that opportunity, so far as we know. In 391 AD, John Chrysostom said that you make the woman's body a place of death. It's sort of like a haunting. And I find this so much in the women that I work with, women who have had abortions. They feel almost haunted by the baby, and they feel that they are carrying around with them like a tomb, a place where someone died. It's very frightening. Murdering human beings is so contrary to our nature. So that's one reason I've been fighting for 42 years now, trying to talk women out of abortion. And I remember one time I was at the abortion clinic down on, it was Concord, down on Illinois Street, which is now closed. But I asked the young girl if she was really certain about her abortion, and she said she was. But I said, would you just come and let me just talk to you for 5 minutes? Well, we went down to a restaurant and got a cup of coffee, and I started just explaining the value of life and all. And within 5 minutes, she put her hands out, held them together, and she said, I've stopped trembling. She had been so afraid of going in for the abortion, and now she was going to have her child. And it makes you feel really that you've accomplished something, because this young woman now has a little child. Well, the child's probably grown up by now, but that was some years ago. But to save a life, and not only save a life, but to save a woman from going through the misery and the post-abortion depression. So many people will say, oh, there aren't any consequences, abortion's legal, and that's not true. It's not true. I've known too many women who have had abortions who are now so sorry and wishing they could go back and undo the abortion, undo their past. I don't want to go too much into the foundation of our beliefs, because the Catholic Church has been so clear on this, and stays clear. The people that think that somehow the church is going to change are absolutely wrong. It can't. The church cannot change natural law. It can't change divine positive law. It has to stand by the law and the history. Now, what I want to do, because on my next program, I'm going to have the author of a very excellent book, called Abandoned. This is Monica Migliorino Miller from Michigan, and Monica has written this book. She used to live in Chicago. We were very good friends, and we went on a lot of escapades together, collecting the bodies of babies so that we could give them a Christian burial. And so I'm going to have Monica on my next show. But I want to go very quickly through how abortion got hold in America, just what happened. And so we have to go back to the 60s with the sexual revolution, which goes in 1965, Griswold versus Connecticut was a law out in Connecticut where they said that it was the state's law against contraception was struck down, was wrong. And that kind of led into the sexual revolution in 1964. We had Guttmacher organizing the ACLU and AMA and American Public Health Associations all getting together with Planned Parenthood. In 1966, we had the foundation of NOW. Those are the women that sued me, the National Organization for Women. They had a big convention. The Ford Foundation, the Population Council, the Office of Economic Opportunity, all were pressuring the government to subsidize contraception. And we were fighting it here in Chicago. The Illinois Right to Life Committee was established. They put out a film on the committee. They saw this coming. And then with the formation of the National Association for the Repeal of Abortion Laws, NARAL, which later became the National Abortion Rights Action League, and then later on Abortion and Reproductive Rights Action League, they were fighting hard to get the laws changed. And then in the 1970s, when we were not expecting at all, most of us weren't, abortion became the federal right, the federal law of the land, by the passage of the decision by the Supreme Court in the Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton decisions. And then a great number of us started getting together. And it was tough. It was tough in those days to know what to do. You didn't have any guidelines. You didn't have any books. You did have Jack Wilkie's book and his slide presentation. And people started using that because Wilkie's slide presentation was pictures of the baby developing in the womb and abortion of those babies at the different times of gestation. And this became everybody's tool. I used to carry my projector around with me and the slides, and when anybody wanted me to give a talk, I would say, on one condition, that you let me show the pictures. Now, Jack had an interesting way of working back to conception. I like to start with conception and work up toward birth. But any way you used it, there was it was an education, and people started giving these talks. And usually you would have a lawyer along to explain the legal aspects of abortion and a doctor to give the medical testimony. But you didn't need to do that. If you couldn't get your doctor and your lawyer and you as the presenter, you could do it yourself. And that's what it came down to for the most part. Pro-life groups started popping up all over the place. And I worked for a group called Friends for Life for a while. I worked for the Illinois Right to Life Committee. And then finally, because I wanted to be more active and not be held down by a board of directors deciding what I could and couldn't do, because I had to act quickly, I founded the Pro-Life Action League in 1980. And I was chairman of the board so I could decide. Because when you had to go out and talk, when you had to go down to Springfield and lobby, when you had to go to the clinic, when you had to protest a pro-abortion politician, maybe being honored by a Catholic school or a Catholic church, you had to act fast. So that's what we did. Now on my program coming up next week, we will have Monica Migliorino Miller, our guest from Michigan. She's the author of the fantastic pro-life book, Abandoned.
This has been an episode of Pro-Life Today with Joe Scheidler. For more information about this or any program on WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio, call 224-206-8454. or email info@wsfiradio.org.